Hello and welcome to the first episode of Walden Pod. My name is Emerson Green, and today we'll be discussing whether or not philosophy is dead. So, near the very beginning of his book, The Grand Design, the late Stephen Hawking made the infamous proclamation, "Philosophy is dead," provoking a lot of anger and a lot of confusion. Hawking's remarks have been much maligned and, I would say, misunderstood. The philosophical community treated his comments as yet another uninformed disparagement of philosophy from a major science communicator. Other offenders have included Lawrence Krauss, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Bill Nye, and, allegedly, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris. The only reason it's harder to think of a famous philosopher who thinks we don't need science or that science is a bad thing is because philosophers typically do not enjoy the same status as scientists. There aren't philosophy communicators in the same way that there are science communicators, but I know from experience that there are plenty of bizarro Lawrence Krausses and Neil deGrasse Tysons who have nothing but negative things to say about science. So let's hear what Hawking actually said in context.
People have always asked a multitude of questions. How can we understand the world in which we find ourselves? How does the universe behave? What is the nature of reality? Where did all this come from? Did the universe need a creator? Most of us do not spend most of our time worrying about these questions, but almost all of us worry about them some of the time. Traditionally, these are questions for philosophy, but philosophy is dead. Philosophy has not kept up with modern developments in science, particularly physics. Scientists have become the bearers of the torch of discovery in our quest for knowledge.
So we have to ask, what is philosophy and what is science? The Greeks defined philosophy as the love of wisdom, which is what their word for philosophy meant, literally. And I agree, I think philosophy is about the love and pursuit of wisdom, and by extension, truth. As for science, I would say science is an empirical process and a body of knowledge, where we make predictions, build models, and run experiments to try to figure out how the world works. I think that science is a part of philosophy. It's a subfield or a branch of philosophy. Philosophy is our search for truth writ large, and science is a rigorous empirical study of the world with the same aim as philosophy. We obviously don't have to choose one to the exclusion of the other. Empiricism is important, and so is ethics, logic, aesthetics, and epistemology. If you're a philosopher, you won't end up with an accurate understanding of the world if you don't incorporate some of the things we've learned from science. Science has a lot to say about how the universe works. And if you want to argue, as most philosophers do, that science is a part of philosophy, but then neglect to learn about science, you're trying to understand the universe without taking advantage of everything we know about the universe. You're basically excluding one branch of philosophy arbitrarily and trying to go on without it. It would be akin to being a philosopher who has contempt for epistemology and refuses to learn anything about it. There's no reason to try to understand reality with one hand tied behind your back, so we shouldn't do philosophy without science and vice versa. The disdain for philosophy from scientists is a relatively new trend, and I think it's a poisonous one. Do people actually think that life will be better if no one reads about ethics, or logic, or political philosophy? An optimal world is one where we all learn how to code and have no time for thinking about morality, language, knowledge, or beauty in any serious way? Philosophy and science shouldn't be at odds, and for the vast majority of Western history, they weren't. Since the idea of a scientist is somewhat new, it may be unfair to claim Aristotle, Descartes, and Isaac Newton as philosophers, but they were considered natural philosophers before the concept of a scientist emerged. Many philosophers not only embraced science, but advanced science, and some of the greatest scientists in the world, like Einstein, were very philosophically adept.
Vocal about their disregard for philosophy in recent years, and it's an interesting phenomenon because until not that long ago, let's say until a few decades ago, physicists and philosophers of science got along perfectly fine. In fact, a lot of the major physicists of the 20th century, from Einstein to Bohr, prided themselves in an understanding of philosophy and in an interactive dialogue with philosophers.
So I can see three distinct groups in this debate. The all philosophy and no science camp, the all science and no philosophy camp, and then what I perceive to be the majority, those who are happy to embrace both. The all philosophy and no science camp, the bizarro Lawrence Krauss camp, on a personal level, those people are the most annoying to me. And the second camp, the all science and no philosophy camp, inevitably end up doing philosophy in the process of explaining why philosophy doesn't matter and why science does. But the third group, who are happy to embrace both, unfortunately doesn't always frame it in that way. Sam Harris is sometimes mistakenly placed in the all science and no philosophy group by some of his critics, but it's clear that he's defining science a little differently, and this is also true of Richard Dawkins, in my opinion. Harris has said, quote, "Science simply represents our best effort to understand what is going on in this universe, and the boundary between it and the rest of rational thought cannot always be drawn," end quote. He's using science in a broader sense, sort of in the colloquial sense that science has taken on in our culture, a rigorous search for the truth, which is fine with me, but it's not far from the traditional definition of philosophy, before there was a scientist-philosopher distinction, and before it was fashionable to dismiss philosophy entirely.
So what distinguished a philosopher for Plato from, say, a poet or a religious person was that their main activity was not to make things beautiful or please the gods or any other supplementary thing. It was their main driving goal was to pursue truth. And that's basically it. For years and years and years, this definition basically stuck with us. Like, I think if you ask Plato what's philosophy and you ask Hegel what's philosophy, they'll basically give the same answer in different terms. And then sometime like around the 19th century, things started to change because we started to have this idea that science was something else other than philosophy. So science, a lot of people think, what is science? Like if you ask people today, what's science? A lot of them might give that same definition, the pursuit of truth, right? Mm-hmm. Empirically, using an empirical method.
Scientists are going to do philosophy whether they know it or not. So they might as well know what they're talking about and do it well. And likewise, there's no reason for philosophers to exclude an enormous chunk of the data we've collected about reality through science. Philosophy as the seeking of wisdom should include the findings of other intellectual pursuits, including the sciences. I think Hawking is reacting against a particular kind of philosopher that definitely exists, but he ends up throwing out the baby with the bathwater. The kind of philosopher I'm referring to is one who resents science while simultaneously taking credit for it on behalf of philosophy, and knows very little about science despite their disdain for it. And they're on the other end of the spectrum from the scientists who think philosophy is nothing but pointless navel-gazing. So in his infamous quote, Hawking is rightly pointing out that trying to gain wisdom and knowledge about the universe without science is pretty much pointless and doomed to fail. But he doesn't acknowledge that likewise, doing science without philosophy is pointless and doomed to fail, if for no other reason that we won't know what science is telling us. We need to do philosophy in order to interpret what science tells us. I think there's truth to Hawking's comments, and they probably don't deserve the ire they received, but he ultimately goes too far.
You know, I know Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's been on my podcast a couple of times. I know Lawrence Krauss. DeGrasse Tyson echoed that by basically saying that, you know, philosophers have stopped being relevant when they stopped furthering the advancement of science. It is simply not the business of philosophy, even a philosophy of science, to further science in the very specific sense of helping scientists figuring out things about how the world works. I mean, we have science for that, and it works very well. Thank you very much. So it doesn't need any help from philosophy. And in fact, philosophy is not structured to provide that sort of help. Philosophy of science in particular is a way to look at the doings of science from the outside, specifically from the epistemic warrant perspective. So we want to know as philosophers how science works logically. Is it that scientists take to be sufficient evidence for their theories, how they construct their theories, that sort of stuff. Similarly, we have other fields that study science from the outside, but from different perspectives. We have sociology of science, for instance, that of course looks at the social interactions as of scientists as human beings. We have history of science, which looks at how science has actually scientific controversies and progress have actually unfolded throughout time. Now, I never heard deGrasse Tyson wondering, you know, why sociology or history of science haven't made a contribution to, you know, string theory or cosmology recently, because that would be really a silly question to ask. And I don't see why he doesn't see that that's just as silly in the case of philosophy of science.
To those who don't have much of an appetite for philosophy, the questions and the way they're handled can feel pedantic, hair-splitting, tedious, and untethered to anything concrete. But in those cases, I would say, paraphrasing William James on metaphysics, that philosophy is just an unusually obstinate insistence on being clear. Unfortunately, many philosophers needlessly complicate their language with pointless jargon, affect a bizarrely pompous attitude, and I've also noticed that philosophy seems to attract many who would rather sound intelligent than be clearly understood. This obscurantism is insecurity on their part. As Nietzsche said, those who know they are profound strive for clarity. Those who would like to seem profound to the crowd strive for obscurity. Personally, I get a lot of pleasure out of explaining something well so someone gets it, whether it's profound or not. It positively gives me pleasure to explain something in plain language and have them understand. Unfortunately, sometimes technical language is necessary in philosophy, and it can be hard to distinguish the obscurantists from those who are obstinately insisting on being clear. Which brings us to the valid criticism that philosophy is often frustratingly untethered, in the sense that it's hard to prove others wrong, and it's even harder to get others to agree that they're wrong. This can also be a problem in science, but scientists make falsifiable predictions. They can run an experiment in the lab and be proven wrong publicly by a standard that everyone agreed was the arbiter ahead of time. And unfortunately, the philosopher has no lab. So to an outsider, it can seem like it's all just opinion. This untetheredness is often a bug, but there are valid questions that are very difficult to test in practice, and therefore science can't be as helpful as it usually is. There are plenty of examples of things science could test in principle, but can't in practice. Think about psychology, for example. Self-report is a notoriously unreliable method for getting accurate information, and that's a big hindrance for psychology. And yet, human behavior is something I would like to talk about. I would still like to think about what people do and why, and the human experience more broadly, and since I'm interested in the truth about those things, I would like to do so with my best effort. Sometimes scientists will say of questions that science can't settle, that's something that's best handled with a few drinks with close friends. And while I agree that that can be fun and enlightening, I still want to think about these things as clearly as possible. And for me, that's where philosophy comes in. Related to the question of what philosophy is in the first place is the question of whether philosophy can make progress. I would say the answer is yes, though I suppose it depends on how you define philosophy. We can get closer to truth and inspire more love for it and the search for it. It might be hard to know when we're closer to the truth, but that doesn't mean we aren't closer. On this question, Massimo Piolucci writes, quote, "Philosophy makes progress, though it does so in a different sense from progress in science. You can think of philosophy as an exploration of conceptual space as opposed to empirical space, concerning all sorts of questions ranging from ethics to politics, from epistemology to the nature of science. Imagine a highly dimensional landscape of ways of thinking about a given question, such as, do scientific theories describe the world as it is, or should we think of them rather as simply being empirically adequate? The philosopher explores that landscape by constructing arguments, entertaining counterarguments, and either discarding or refining a certain view. The process does not usually lead to one final answer, though it does eliminate a number of bad ones, because conceptual space is much broader than its empirical counterpart, which means there may be more than one good way of looking at a particular question. Progress consists in identifying and climbing these peaks in conceptual space."
Like, I remember David Chalmers gave a talk about this, and he's like, oh, is there a large-scale convergence to the truth? Yeah. And you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And then you're, if that's the way you define it, you're like, well, I'm not sure, because how can we tell? How do we know that we're converging to the truth? There's really no way. But I think the way to know if philosophy is making progress is a lot simpler than that. You do a little thought experiment where you imagine we take Aristotle, we transport him today, we show him all the philosophy that's occurred from that time to this, and we say, look, do we have anything to teach you? Or did you finish back then?
Right.
And what do you think he would say? He'd say, look at all this stuff I never even thought to ask, you know? Philosophy of mind, philosophy of language, all this moral philosophy. He never would have even considered it. So of course we would have things to teach Aristotle. We know things that Aristotle didn't know. We know things about Aristotelian logic that Aristotle didn't know, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And looking at moral philosophy, we would think of Aristotle as a virtue ethicist, a virtue ethicist. He wouldn't even know that, though, because we think of virtue ethics in contrast to these other kinds of ethics, utilitarianism, Kant. So he doesn't even know he's a virtue ethicist in the way that we would think of it. That would be a fact that he would learn about himself, almost, in a way. So yeah, I think philosophy obviously makes progress.